Thanks for spending time with us on The Green this week. I'm Tom Byrne. The Air National Guard we know today, a crucial reserve sector of the U.S. Air Force, used to be known as nothing more than a flying club for World War II veterans. That was back during its early years in the mid-20th century. And in his new book, The Air National Guard, Delaware Air National Guard and U.S. Air Force veteran Brigadier General Kennard Wiggins Jr. chronicles how the Guard evolved into an operational force during the Korean War and the so-called Jet Age. In this edition of History Matters, Delaware Public Media's Kyle McKinnon sits down with Brigadier General Wiggins to learn more about the Air National Guard's transformative years.
You've already written a plethora of history and military books. We spoke not too long ago about another then new book of yours, Delaware Patriot Heroes. And now you've published The Air National Guard, The Early Years, 1946 to 1965. Before we get into the minutia of the book, though, I am curious, where did this idea come from, you know, and why write about the first two decades of the Air National Guard?
There's a fellow named David McAllister who was in my old Air Guard unit, and he died actually before I joined the unit. I never met the gentleman, but he had entered a thing called the Ricks Air Race in 1956. And he broke a speed record flying cross country, and he won the race that year and was acclaimed and all that sort of thing. And he was a sort of a local hero. But the best thing about McAllister was not only was he an aviator, his career dated back to World War II. He was a fighter pilot in World War II and so on. But he was also a writer, a fine writer, a very good writer. And I read his account of this race. And he must have enjoyed this race so much that he wrote three different versions. He wrote an extended story, I think, in Flying Magazine. He wrote a screenplay in case somebody wanted to try to make it into a movie. And I think he had like a third version. Each of the versions were just a little different in some of the details, but still it was a really, really cool story. So that got me interested in a thing called the Ricks Trophy Race, which was held by the Air National Guard from 1954 to the early 60s. And every year they would have a cross-country race and they would invite the different units. To me, it was a really interesting story. The purpose of these races at the time, the Air National Guard was brand new. It had only been in existence for, you know, maybe less than 10 years. And so they were trying to build support among the public. They were trying to convince the Air Force that they were capable partners. They were, you know, it was honestly a public relations stunt, but it was well worthwhile. It was an interesting race that attracted a lot of attention at the time. And almost nobody knows anything about these races today, but at the time they were kind of a big deal. So the book started out as a story about air racing in the Air National Guard, but you kind of needed more. It wasn't much of a book. And so that's kind of the genesis of the book. And as I kept going, I added more and more pieces. I just began to collect these pieces and I put them together. It was kind of a mishmash, honestly. The dates are a little bit arbitrary. 1946 is pretty easy. That's when the Guard started. But I had to cut it off someplace. So I cut it off in the mid-60s. And otherwise, it would just go on and on and on, you know.
Well, that I'm glad you brought up that so-called Jet Age, I believe, because I did make a note of that. It's something I don't think a lot of people are exactly aware of, but it truly is fascinating. I am curious, though, this next question. You're the perfect person to answer it. For those who aren't sure, who don't really know, as a Delaware Air National Guard and U.S. Air Force veteran, Ken, what exactly is the difference between the Air National Guard and Air Force active duty? What's the distinguishment there?
Well, the National Guard, just in general, is a state organization. In peacetime, the commander-in-chief is the governor of the state. In wartime, they can be federalized and they become a federal asset and they become part of the Air Force. If you're a member of the Air National Guard, you have a dual status. You're both federal if you're called and you're state if in normal terms. You might say, okay, what does the governor of some state need with F-16s? And, you know, why would a governor need, you know, fighter jets? And the point of the exercise there is it's not so much the jets themselves. Is typically a unit will have, say, 1,000 people. It'll have medics. It'll have engineers. It'll have nurses. It'll have all kinds of different skills. It'll have trucks. It'll have cots and beds and first aid equipment. So when the governor has an emergency and needs help during a hurricane or during a some other natural disaster, it's a great resource. Those folks can be called, away from their desks or their jobs and brought back into service in the state to help out. And that's the primary difference. The Air National Guard is a reserve component of the Air Force. Although it is a reserve component of the Air Force, is also a state organization answerable to the governor. I hope that clarifies.
No, it clarifies. It clarifies. Especially as someone who is the child of two Air Force veterans, I can yeah, I can that makes sense. Adds up. But as far as the Air National Guard, then how do we have an idea of how it was received when it was first created? Like, what was it? Whether it's by the public, veterans, or active service members, do we know if it was something that was taken seriously, or do we have an idea of how it was viewed?
Well, I think looking back at the history, the actually during World War II, this was being discussed. What are we going to do after the war? How's this going to be set up? And of course, the Air Force hadn't even been existed, hadn't been invented at that point. They were still part of the Army, but they were pretty confident that they were going to be an independent service after the war. And their vision was, if they were going to have a reserve component, it would be the Air Force Reserve. It would be a federal organization. And they pretty much resisted the idea of a National Guard air arm. But there were some pretty powerful voices speaking on behalf of the National Guard, including General Marshall, who was the chief of staff of the Army during World War II. He had served with National Guard units back in the 30s with the Civilian Conservation Corps and so on. And he had a lot of respect for the National Guard and what it could do. It's a hometown organization, and that gives it a certain kind of strength that nobody else can match. So, okay, with great reluctance, the Air Force had to accept this idea of an Air National Guard. What they did was they had a lot of surplus equipment. They had, just fighter planes left over from World War II, and there were also thousands of veterans, combat veterans of World War II. So, okay, well, we'll enlist these veterans. And we'll give them these airplanes to fly and to maintain their proficiency and keep them ready to fly. And that's about all it amounted to. Some derisively called it a flying club, if you will, of veterans. And back in those days, they were flying, pretty much obsolete equipment, but it was a way to keep the guys in the cockpit, keep them current. But things began to change relatively quickly. Even by the late 40s, the units were transitioning from their old World War II fighter planes into modern jets. You might say, in some ways, it goes on this tension between the active components and the reserve components over their reputation and their skill sets and so on. There's a sympathy, I think, on the active side that said, those guys are amateurs. They're only weekenders. On the other side of that divide, we train to the same standards. We do all the same things the Air Force does, and there shouldn't be any difference. But today, I would say that the Air National Guard is a full partner in the total force with the Air Force and is recognized broadly and widely for its skills and the contribution it makes. But back in the early days, that was a tougher sell to make, and so it took time to gain the confidence of the Air Force.
It certainly didn't happen overnight, transforming from a so-called flying club, as you mentioned, to a full-fledged operational force that we know it as today. A big part of that transformation, 4 years after it was created, the Air National Guard was mobilized for the Korean War. What kind of impact, did the Korean War have on the Guard and its growth and how it was generally viewed?
Well, most of the Air Guard units in the country were activated or federalized for the Korean War. The Guard is a sort of a unit-centered organization. They train together. They do everything together, and the hope and expectation is that the unit will be mobilized and sent off to do their job. And that was true in a few cases, a handful of cases. There were a couple of squadrons that were sent to Korea as squadrons, but for the most part, the Air Force used the Air National Guard as a sort of a manpower pool for replacements, individual replacements. So My unit, for example, the Delaware Air Guard, wasn't sent to Korea. It stayed home. But most of the pilots were picked and sent to Korea to fly with different Air Force organizations. So they used the skills, but they didn't use the unit, as it were. They used individuals. And that kind of left a sour taste in some folks' mouth about the way that was done. One of the other things that happened was a lot of these folks were World War II veterans. They had served in World War II 4 or 5 years earlier. Now they're activated for another war, and they sort of made a couple of decisions. Either they said, "Okay, when I'm done with this, I'm done. I'm not going to do this again. I'm leaving." Or two, "I kind of like being in the Air Force again. I think I'll stay." And many of them stayed in the Air Force and never came home. So one result of that was there was a big impact on manpower in the Air Guard. We lost a lot of people, not through casualties, but through resignations or the fact that the people stayed in the Air Force. And so it had to rebuild itself after the war in terms of people and personnel. In terms of equipment, it did accelerate modernization again. Instead of the hand-me-down stuff, a lot of the units got newer and better airplanes as a result of the buildup for Korea and the surplus of airplanes afterwards.
Thanks to Delaware Air National Guard and U.S. Air Force veteran Brigadier General Kennard Wiggins Jr. and our Kyle McKinnon for showing us why history matters this week.